this thing called grace. There's so much, I think like any business, but particularly in ministry, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes of any job, particularly here in Unity of Fox Valley, the planning, the details, the minutiae, all that stuff. And when Reverend Mike and I plan the Sunday talk topics, sometimes it's months in advance. And then as we get closer, Rob gives me a call, or he'll send a text, and it goes something like this. What can you tell me about fill in the blank, whatever the topic is? Because he wants more information so he can pull the music so that it really supports what it is I'm saying, and it makes a much more effective message. So at any rate, earlier last week, he sent me a text, and I thought, oy vey. It's such a huge topic. How do I not use up all his data? I'm trying to explain what all this was about. And so I kind of summarized some of the main points. But it was really kind of fun because it really made me aware of just how huge and diverse and multifaceted this topic of grace is. So when I say the word grace to you, what comes to mind? Is it the, what was that? Oh, oh, this is such an oral congregation, I swear. Well, yes. Hail Mary, yes. Bless us, O Lord. Yes, okay. Appreciation. Okay. What about the song Amazing Grace? How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. We don't in Unity say wretch, but I mean the original wording was Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. That really kind of sums up this whole concept. Now, that was coming from a very anguished soul. Or to those of you who are maybe raised in the Catholic faith, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with you. It comes from the Bible story where the angel appears to Mary and announces to her that she's now going to be the mother of Jesus. And when we look at that story that's behind that the prayer was based on, in that light, that word grace, when you think about it, I think gives the impression that being full of grace is a wonderful thing, but given the rest of the story, Mary then replies to the angel, be it done unto me according to your word. It sounds kind of submissive, doesn't it? Kind of passive. So it's kind of like we have this wonder and then we have this, uh-oh, there's strings attached to this idea of grace. When we consider that song, Amazing Grace, that song has been sung or played at thousands and thousands of funerals. Why? Why do you think it would be such a popular song for funerals? Given its history and the words, it's a song about redemption. It's a song about salvation. There's several other choruses to it. And it's a song about assurance in that grace of God guiding the person who wrote these lyrics through life. Especially, and I think the reason it's done at funerals, because if there's any a time that's more uncertain and we're more fraught with change and grief and all kinds of emotions and uncertainty, it would be that transition of dying. And so to hear those words, it kind of calms our heart, doesn't it? Many of you know the story of John Newton, who wrote those lyrics. He was a slave trader. He was the captain of a slave ship. Did it for many years. And at that time, when you think about it, being a captain of a slave ship was considered a genteel occupation. At one point in this story of John Newton, he himself was treated as a slave and was captive. He eventually escaped, came back to England because he was English, and he later had a change of heart, and he became an English Anglican minister. And it was during that time that Newton wrote those lyrics, and that was then set to music. And later, he went on to become a strong proponent of slavery abolition. He was very active in getting laws passed in England. But to go from the kind of, even before he was a ship's captain, he was quite a character, let's just put it that way. So his transformation, his turnaround, was pretty astounding. And so what these words say in Amazing Grace is a story of his salvation and his redemption, because it's about that wretch, as he referred to himself. I mean, can you imagine referring to yourself as a wretch? Now, I know we get up some days and we aren't real confident, but he was doing a lot of soul searching. The message of Amazing Grace, bottom line, is that even at our worst, and John Newton knew what he was talking about, no matter what we've done, we can still be saved. We can still be redeemed. Our lives can change because of God's grace. I mean, what a beautiful, beautiful message. What I find interesting, you know me, I always like to know the story behind the story whenever I talk about these things. The word grace is used very sparingly in Hebrew scriptures. I think it's got, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 references. In Christian scriptures, it's used 7 times, and Jesus never used the word grace. I find that interesting. It's like, isn't that interesting? But the word grace is used over 120 times in Paul's epistles. So what we know of, or what we think we know of grace really comes from Paul's letters to his different churches explaining this concept of grace. But as I say, Jesus never used that word. So why is it significant? Well, I'm going to tell you. More background about this. As I say, I'm usually more interested in the backstory than I am in the story. Martin Luther, you're all familiar with him. He's the father of the Protestant Reformation. And it was a reformation against the Catholic Church. Now, he never meant to start a new religion, but, you know, when you start kicking the bricks out of a solid wall, things start falling apart, and we ended up with a different faith. And on Luther's spiritual journey, he suffered from such a scrupulous consciousness. And in spiritual terms, a scrupulous consciousness is someone who just, even when he goes to confession and confesses his sins, he doesn't feel he's really been absolved. You know, he just ruminates on the mistakes he made and the sins that he committed. And he just dwelled on every transgression. And he really believed he could never, ever be saved. He could never, ever merit heaven. I mean, what an awful idea. But you have to remember the teachings at the time. And again, as I say, he had this scrupulous consciousness. What I find interesting, as I always do, the key principle, the key doctrine of Lutheranism is a doctrine of justification. He believes humans are saved from their sins by God's grace alone, also faith and also scripture. But this idea of grace is central to the whole Lutheran belief. Not works, grace. And works, because in the Catholic Church at that time, well, I shouldn't say the Catholic Church, that was only the church at the time. There were novenas and rosaries and pilgrimages and good works and all kinds of things, acts you had to do, works you had to do in order to maybe be saved. And Luther was saying, You're saved by grace and faith and the words of Scripture. Wow, that's a huge, that may not sound like a lot, that was huge. Some favorite quotes I have from Scripture. Well, I don't have them. You have them also if you look at the Bible. In the Gospel of John, which is the Gospel of love, that's my favorite gospel. We have this quote, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt amongst us, full of grace and truth." And the Word, he's referring to Jesus as the culmination of all of the Scripture that came before. This one is lovely. I'm going to talk a little bit more about it. "For the law was given to Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." So what the heck does that have to do with anything? I'll tell you. In the epistle of Titus, Paul says, "Grace of God brings understanding." So if we're in a state of grace, that now allows us to have more spiritual understanding. Well, we all want that. I mean, don't we? I would think. That's why you're here. And this is my all-time favorite in the second letter to Corinthians. Paul is talking to his congregation about his weaknesses and how he just doesn't feel he's the best person to do the job, but he's doing the job anyway because he's impelled to do this. And he says, in his prayer time, Jesus told him, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." My grace? I don't care what your problems are, Paul. My grace is sufficient for you because I'm going to give you the power. You don't think you can do it? Just do it. I'll be there. My grace is sufficient, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So, in essence, what it's saying is just the very fact you can't do something, the fact you're doing it, I'm coming through. My grace is coming through. That should be proof that I'm here. So, what do we know about grace so far? It brings understanding. This is good. It brings power. And if we look at our way shower Jesus, it brings supernatural power. Grace and love are synonymous. Every place you see love, you could insert grace. And every place you see the word grace, you could insert love in Scripture. Try that sometime. Jesus, the Word, dwelt among us and was full of grace and truth. So here's this example for us of grace and truth. The other interesting point is Moses represents the law, in capital terms, in the Hebrew Scriptures, Mosaic Law. The old way. Jesus represents grace and truth, the fulfillment of the law. In Scripture, we get this whole passage in Matthew, I believe. And Jesus is clarifying the law, Mosaic law. And he says things like, "You've heard it said," and he gives the law of Moses. "But I tell you," and he gives the nuances of the law, the deeper meanings of the law. We just finished this series on the Ten Commandments, and we really dove into that. And so he says things like, "You've heard it said, do not kill," but that's the law. "I'm saying whoever is angry at his brother sins." Oh, that sounds, you know, quite a leap. I can't even be angry. "You've heard it said, do not commit adultery." But that line made famous by former President Jimmy Carter, you know, anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has committed adultery in his heart. He doesn't even have to do anything about it. The very fact that the thoughts were there. "Do not judge. You too will be judged with the measure you use. It will be measured to you." Ooh, there's a scary thought. I don't know about you, Thank God for grace, because I had a teacher. She said, thank God for grace, because she said the planet would have blown up with all the negativity we sometimes put out there. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. And there's more. You know, so what's really going on here when Jesus is saying, well, here's the old way, but that's not enough. I mean, it was okay to start there. You need to start somewhere. You need to be aware of that. But now I'm taking you someplace else. When we look at it, when you really read these scriptures, and this is what I love when you really dig into this stuff, the law of Moses forbids actual acts. I can't physically kill somebody. I can't physically commit adultery. I can't physically do that. The law of grace and truth brought by Jesus forbids faulty consciousness. Deb is going, yeah, she just came back from the village. I'm sure she's been drummed into this. Not only does it forbid the actual act, the consciousness, the narrow consciousness is what it forbids. Ooh. The law of Moses is about acts. The law of grace and truth is about thoughts and consciousness. In Matthew, one of the most important, I think most profound of these meanings of the law that Jesus is teaching, I think this is the real clue to this concept of grace. Jesus says, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. We're all familiar, whether we read scripture or not, we're familiar with that. It sounds reasonable and logical. You do this to me, I'll do that to you. You steal this, I'll steal that from you. And then Jesus goes on, the law says, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Jesus goes on and says, do not resist an evil person. What? What does that have to do with eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth? It means, essentially, do not give energy to evil. Don't give your energy to negative energy from someone else or some situation, is what that's saying. Don't give anger for anger. Don't give judgment for judgment. Oh, it gets worse. You know, love your enemies, he tells us. And he goes on to say, if you love only those who love you, anybody can do that. Even the tax collector, who was probably one of the most hated people. And he goes on to say things like, forgive 70 times 7, turn the other cheek, go the extra mile. Not happy stuff here. But he also says, I love this, you know, he gives all this stuff. And he says, but greater things will you do. Not only what I can do, if you just sort of follow these rules, you'll be walking on water. You'll be healing the sick. You'll be doing all kinds of amazing things. We're being called higher, always, in any spiritual. I don't care whether it's this belief, whether you're a Buddhist, whether you're, no matter what you are, any spiritual journey is about being called to a higher, deeper understanding of the oneness of human beings. And what we're being called to do, because, I mean, we're human after all, is to move through the resistance, to release and move through the resistance to love. Because if we truly loved, we'd be loving our neighbor. Yeah, we wouldn't be having these thoughts. As I said before, Jesus never used the word grace. I wonder why that is. Because Jesus was grace. He was a walking, talking example of grace in action. All you have to do is look at how he acted, at what he did. unconditional love, unconditional forgiveness, faith. And that man had an abundance consciousness, not to mention power. A little bit more on this shift from the law. Not that there's anything wrong with it. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. As we move from eye for an eye mentality, which is really about even exchanges. You do this to me, I do that to you. You do this for me, I'll do that for you. I'll love you if you love me. I'll do things only if I'm recognized. Hanging on to I'm right instead of being healed and whole. Been there, done that. How giving and generous are we? What happens when we move from law to grace, from even exchanges? As we release some of the stuff we so tenaciously hold on to, some of that old programming, our resistance to love and connect with one another, as we move to unconditional love and not giving our energy to negative energy or to evil, as Jesus tells us, we move into a state of grace. I think one of the loveliest definitions of grace came from what my old metaphysics teacher, and he said, that aspect of divine love that doesn't deal in even exchanges, but in the increase of good through greater giving. So what's Ed telling us? The more we give, the more comes back to us. Another definition of grace is God's love in action. Every time we see love in action, think about it. That's God's grace. This consciousness stuff is so important because we know from that law of mind action, what we hold in our thoughts. Thoughts held in mind produce after their kind, which is kind of a cute little way of saying it. If we're not loving, our world, our reality isn't loving. If we're not forgiving, our world, our reality is not forgiving. If we're not generous, funny thing, our world is very stingy with us. So, lots of backstories, lots of information. And what I'd like to say in closing, what is this thing called grace? It's a state of consciousness from which all good comes. And the neat thing is, grace is our destiny. We don't have to work to get it. It's there. We just have to remove the blocks to that flow of grace. We're destined to live a grace-filled life. Isn't that exciting? I think so. Grace is multifaceted. It's expansive. We're not talking even exchanges here. It's like one of my metaphysics teachers used to say, you can't outgive God, is the way she used to put it. Whatever little we give in any of these areas, whatever little love we give, comes back 100 times over. God doesn't deal in even exchanges, but in the increase of good. Do you ever think about a little bit of forgiveness when you get up the courage to do that? Goes a long way, doesn't it? Isn't it amazing, this grace stuff? So you have an assignment. If you're interested in this topic at all, if you're interested in moving to that level that our way shower Jesus talked about, to keep a journal. Instead, start identifying the action of God's grace in our lives. Become aware of it working in our lives. And it's easy to see. It's love in action. Anytime we see, I can point out probably 100 ideas of love in action. The hours Kathleen spent, our office manager, doing this because she wanted it to be beautiful for us. The amount of time Bob and Marianne spend downstairs doing the hospitality for us. The time our board puts together planning community events. I mean, that was there when we did our board brainstorming. It was like ideas of community and connection. I'm such a narrow piece. There are layers and layers and layers of people who give and share their gifts here. So start trying to identify those things. We're in the month of gratitude and Thanksgiving. Every time we see love in action, that's God's grace. Somebody going the extra mile for us. Pay attention to where we're putting up blocks or where we're resisting. I always say your greatest breakthroughs are always on the other side of your greatest resistance. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just stubborn. But boy, when I push through, it's just, the skies open, the birds sing. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. Those are the good lyrics for a song. But at any rate, so pay attention to where we're resisting and putting up blocks. And those thoughts and feelings we have that are opposed to this idea of love. I mean, we're getting great examples of it now as the election is imminent. Just the amount of negativity out there. And it's not just that. I mean, there's a lot of that in our world that ain't that awful. Just remember, love brings more love. Forgiveness brings more forgiveness. Generosity brings more generosity. Try it. You'll be astounded. Pay attention to what we're identifying with. Not always easy because we got programming. Are we identifying with anger or compassion, judgment or acceptance, hopelessness or joy? Thoughts held in mind produce our reality. Produce our world. The payoff for the work that you do around this area, this diligence, is grace consciousness. And I, trust me on this, when we get to that level of grace consciousness, even on our travels up to that level of grace consciousness, things become absolutely effortless.